with the power of Tandem HR, you are in the fast lane on Main Street with Get Down to Business with Shalom Klein, the show for business and jobs. Now, the champion of networking, the advocate of jobs, the guru of business, your host, Shalom Klein.
We are all about small business, jobs, and entrepreneurship and business. We talk a lot about business here. You're on with Get Down to Business, and I'm your host, Shalom Klein. Remember, you could always get on my website, shalomklein.com, to download podcasts from this show and find out who's going to be on next week on the show that's all about small business, jobs, and entrepreneurship. And while you're there, don't forget to follow me on Twitter, at Shalom Klein. We've got a jam-packed lineup of guests, content, information, tips, and advice for you. You won't want to miss a minute of it, so don't touch that dial, Chicago. You're listening to Get Down to Business. I'm your host, Shalom Klein. First up on the program, I've got Mark Densler of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks so much for having me today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So there are a diverse group of business industries across the state that are launching a coalition committed to advocating for modern and permanent extensions of some critical tax incentives that I think will provide some stability and predictability for job creators. Mark, would love to hear a little bit about that coalition and some of the things that you've been advocating for.
Sure. And again, I appreciate you having me on today. So the Illinois Manufacturers Association took it upon ourselves to create a coalition called the Advance Illinois Manufacturing Coalition, or AIM. We recruited a number of partners, and they're very diverse stakeholders, such as Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce, Choose DuPage, Science and Technology Coalition, iBio, a whole host of folks that are all invested in want to see manufacturing survive and actually grow in the state of Illinois. And so we have put together a tax package down here in Springfield of four incentives that are currently or have been on the books, maybe have expired, that we think are meaningful to the manufacturing sector, and everyone is pushing forward together as a coalition to get these things done.
Well, Mark, let's talk about the sector. Manufacturing is important. Everybody knows that. And I understand that manufacturing employs over 500,000 workers in Illinois. Do you know what the contribution to our economy is in dollars?
I do. We're exactly right. We're about 570,000 workers in the state. That's the single largest share of the gross state product, about 12.5%. And last year, manufacturers contributed $101 billion in total manufacturing output to the state. And of the exports, we exported about $68 billion worth of goods last year from Illinois. 93% of those were manufactured products.
And so, that just emphasized the importance of why we need this important legislation to ensure that there are permanent tax credits. Are there other states that are in a similar position as Illinois that having not taken up this issue, are we once again behind on the eight ball?
Unfortunately, we're once again behind on the eight ball. The research and development tax credit, for example, Shalom, this is the fourth time in 13 years that it's expired, providing no certainty or predictability for manufacturers, whether you're in advanced manufacturing or you're pharmaceutical or you're high tech. We are one of very few states now in the country that don't have a research and development tax credit. And keep in mind, the average manufacturing job pays $70,000 a year, including benefits. The average R&D job is closer to $90,000 a year. So these are good, high-paying jobs that we need to keep in the state of Illinois.
Absolutely. So the Advanced Illinois Manufacturing Coalition, the AIM Coalition, is launching in Illinois. A very impressive lineup of coalition members, partners, including folks from, as you mentioned, the Chamber of Commerce, which includes small businesses, and obviously the science and technology folks, and as you said, the Great Lakes Graphics Association. Lots of interesting organizations coming together to support a permanent R&D tax credit, which is important. You just mentioned the contribution to the Illinois economy. But there's some other credits and exemptions that are being advocated for by AIM. If you don't mind, tell us a little bit about the graphic arts piece, because that sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it's an important part. So there are, Shalom, there's about 2,300 graphic arts firms in the state of Illinois, whether it's Chicago or downstate. These are largely family-owned or small, medium-sized companies. And again, Illinois had a graphic arts exemption that would allow a company to buy, for example, a big printing press and not have to pay the sales tax on it as long as it's placed in Illinois. I can tell you we have a member company in Bloomington that bought the first of its kind printer in the United States, very multi-million-dollar purchase, and they wanted to keep their 50 or 60 jobs in the state. And fortunately, they purchased it right before the incentive went away. But for these other printing companies around the state, right now they don't get any benefit by buying equipment located in the state of Illinois. So it's attractive for them to go elsewhere. And so this is an important, a small but important sector of the economy. They employ about 10,000 people in Illinois. And creating a permanent graphic arts sales tax exemption is critical for the printing and graphic arts industry.
So the graphic arts sales tax exemption expired in 2014, and it's really interesting. Again, we're talking with Mark Densler of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. It's really fascinating, Mark, to learn about some of the sectors in the Illinois economy. I think everybody, our listeners, certainly know about the contributions that manufacturing make, but graphic arts, the numbers are staggering, the number of businesses that are here and the numbers of businesses that want to be here, but you sort of have to do a little bit of work to keep them here. You can't just take it for granted, and you've got to make it easy for businesses to do business here, make it easy for them to, as you said, make their purchases here in Illinois, really critical. So we talked about the permanent R&D tax credit. We talked about the graphic arts sales tax exemption. What about the manufacturer's purchase credits?
Yeah, so the manufacturer's purchase credit, this is very similar to the last two. They've no stability and predictability, which is what businesses crave. This is an incentive that's come and gone several times. It's currently expired, and this is really helps the small and mid-sized manufacturing companies that have to buy tangible property that's used in the manufacturing process but doesn't become part of the final product. And so maybe oils, rags, lubricants, that kind of thing, that right now they're taxed on, even though they don't become an end part of the product that's sold. And this is a small credit, but it really helps those mom-and-pop type manufacturing shops that right now expired in 2014. And so what we're proposing, the AIM Coalition, is to merge this into a bigger credit called Manufacturing Machinery Equipment Exemption and make it permanent. And the biggest part of this, when we talk about all these incentives, is we need stability and predictability. As you know, any business that's looking to plan, they don't plan a year in advance or 6 months. They're looking 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road. And the Illinois tax code, with all these things kind of coming and going, just provide absolutely no stability or predictability for job creators.
And every politician loves to talk about making Illinois more competitive, more small business opportunities, stopping job losses. That's the classic one. Every governor is coming into the state of Illinois trying to poach businesses. How many times have you and I, Mark, driven down the highway and seen, are you Illinois'd? that billboard.
Absolutely.
And politicians love talking about it, but this is exactly the type of legislation that they should be supporting. So critical. The final piece that I want to talk to you about is the permanent coal aggregate exploration, mining, and off-highway sales tax exemption. Tell us about that exemption, which is important to an industry, once again, that many of our listeners might not know much about.
Yeah, and then a lot of this is obviously in central and southern Illinois, but your aggregate, your mining equipment, your coal, and so these are things as your, you know, your rock quarries or your farm machinery, agriculture, mining. Right now, again, they have an incentive that's getting ready to go away. It's still on the books, but, you know, companies looking to invest in Illinois say, well, I've only got this for another year. Is it going to be here? And they look at things like the R&D or MPC, and they've seen those go away. And so what we're saying is, again, as opposed to you've got it for a year, let's make it permanent. Let's give some peace of mind to these job creators because we both know they've got limited capital of where to invest, and they're going to make decisions about whether they go to Illinois or Indiana or Michigan or across the pond somewhere. And let's make Illinois attractive. I think one of our frustrations, talking about the importance of manufacturing, we lost 15,000 manufacturing jobs last year in this state. When you look at Indiana, Wisconsin, some of our neighbors who in the last couple of years have gained 90 and 150,000, you know, when Illinois loses those 15,000 workers that average $70,000 a year, those are families that maybe, you know, obviously they can't afford to go on vacation or eat out at restaurants,
sure,
or buy new furniture. And so it's got that ripple impact across the economy.
Wow. Well, again, Mark Densler from the Illinois Manufacturers Association, we appreciate you coming on to join us and get down to business. The IMA, your well-established organization, you represent over 4,000 member companies and facilities, and as some staggering numbers, 570,000 workers in manufacturing, a huge contribution to the economy. Mark, how can people learn more about the IMA and sign on to support the coalition?
Sure. The AIM Coalition, again, Advanced Illinois Manufacturing, and it's AIM-IL.org. So, again, the Advanced Illinois Manufacturing Coalition, or you can visit the IMA website at IMA-net.org. So either one will get you there, but we appreciate your support because manufacturing is a key cog in the economy.
Absolutely. Well, Mark Densler, we appreciate you coming on the program. Check out their website and support small business in Illinois. After the break, we've got more tips, advice, and information for you. You're listening to Get Down to Business. We are all about small business, jobs, and entrepreneurship in business. We talk a lot about business here. You're on with Get Down to Business. I'm your host, Shalom Klein. Get Down to Business is powered by Tandem HR, your solution center. Check them out, TandemHR.com. Joined by Andrew Dennison, the Chief Operating Officer at Lyft. And I don't know about you, but I've been fascinated by drone technology. And Andrew, you know a thing or two about the subject, don't you?
Yeah, we've been flying them for a long time here, so familiar.
Okay, so tell us, are drones just something that Amazon and Mr. Jeff Bezos is dealing with, or is this something that's coming to the market to folks like other small business owners that might be listening to Get Down to Business today?
Much more than just Amazon, absolutely. The first and most popular use right now, real estate agents have a whole new way to display their properties for potential buyers. And it's become very popular. What's just starting to come out is a lot of industrial inspections on high and hard to reach places, high on the construction sites, towers, wind turbines, transmission lines, right? Where sending people to climb up the towers harnessed in, it's just so much less safe. Let's fly a camera up there and check out what we need to check out, right?
So let's talk about safety. This is all over in the news right now. The Federal Aviation Administration is talking about safety of drones, and are drones safe?
Drones are very safe. Yes, they recently have come out with what they call return-to-home feature. So if anything goes wrong, it just calmly flies right back to where it was launched. Understanding where people are coming from, but fortunately there has not been any accidents in flights that we've had over 2 years being in business. So,
Andrew, are you worried about the conversations that are taking place? I've read in the Tribune many times over the past few weeks about municipalities that are passing ordinances. There's rumors that the state and federal government will be passing some legislation restricting drones, limiting drone use. Are you worried about the conversation taking place about regulation of drones?
A little bit. For the most part, municipalities and the cities seem to have been pretty intelligent and kind of let the FAA handle it. If it became a point where every city had their own specific regulations, it would be very hard to run a successful large-scale drone services business, right? But fortunately, for the most part, people have laid back and let the FAA make the rulings.
That makes sense. So tell us a little bit about Lyft Technologies and what you guys do in the aviation and aerospace industries.
Yeah, certainly. We are what we call ourselves a drone liner. And what that means is there's lots of drone manufacturers out there that build the drones, just like Boeing and Airbus build planes. We are similar to Southwest or American Airlines in that we fly the drones. Right, we're a drone liner. And what that means is we meet with companies and help them develop specific flight plans around their applications, help them pick the right platforms and processing to get the data the way they like it, and we connect them with operators and manage the FAA compliance and flight tracking for all the flights. So just like Southwest Flight 1492 from Chicago to L.A., there's Lyft Technologies Flight 1492 that's GPS location X to GPS location Y when you land and take off. So,
I hate to geek out for a moment, but this is so cool. This is so cool.
Thank you. Yeah, it is cool. I know.
Andrew, how did you get into the space? Tell us a little bit about your background, and this is quite the entrepreneurial initiative. Would love to hear the story behind Lyft and how you got involved.
Absolutely. So in college, I had a little panty business that I ran on the side, so I was familiar with the operations of a service business. Shortly after, I joined a different drone startup that was actually building a drone force field so it couldn't crash into anything else in the air. Pretty neat. And after a while, it kind of grew out of that and started my own drone services business called Maven Air. Maven Air last summer was bought by Clayco Construction, and they changed the name and they turned it into Lyft Technologies. And Clayco is a billion-dollar design-build firm, and so we started flying drones on all their construction sites across the country, and that's kind of how we got started.
So, Andrew, tell us your vision of what the world will look like in 5 years, maybe 25 years, and the business world specifically, and how drones might apply in the workplace. You mentioned real estate and getting into hard to reach places, whether it's for photography or inspections. But tell us for some other industries how drones can be impactful and, frankly, beneficial in the business world.
Agriculture. Drones can fly over your field and tell you where your plants are healthy and where they're not. We already talked about keeping inspectors safely planted on the ground, right? Construction sites, we can actually track job progress by inputting a 3D model from the drone against a virtual model that was designed by the architects and looking at where we're ahead and where we're behind. You mentioned delivery. I think in 5 years, Amazon won't be delivering packages. The FAA is not ready to move that quickly. We've actually heard that from FAA meetings we've had. In 25 years, I believe there's going to be drones flying above the power lines all over the country, and there'll be little toll meters on the power lines, and the power companies are going to charge drone companies tolls to fly along their power lines to make deliveries. And there's going to, that's a rumor we've been hearing, at least, from the power companies.
That's fascinating. Interesting. Are there any privacy concerns that that either regulators or just folks out there in the business community are expressing about as drones are expanded for usage?
There are privacy concerns. I would say that right now it's probably the biggest hurdle that us drone companies face is the privacy concerns of the American public, and that's really what's holding up a lot of the regulation in Congress right now. We always say there's already Google Street View, there's already satellites, and we're trying to make everyone else's life safer by using these drones, but people don't always see that, right?
Interesting. So once again, we're chatting with Andrew Dennison, the Chief Operating Officer at Lyft Technologies. Fascinating discussion, education, frankly, about drones and how the world will look in 5 years, 25 years with drone technology. Andrew's predicting that there will be little toll meters on power lines as drones are expanded in usage in so many different sectors. But Andrew, for our listeners that don't that maybe aren't as knowledgeable about drones, what does a drone cost? I'm assuming that it ranges in price.
It certainly does. The most popular drone that everyone talks about is DJI Phantom, and it has a better-than-GoPro camera on it, very accurate flying, and that will cost $1,400, including the camera. And that, if you want to really get a good, solid intro drone, that's your number one. Then you can get drones that are $120,000 that have infrared and really accurate capabilities. I mean, and then you can go all the way up to a Global Hawk, which is millions of dollars, and those are the ones that the military flies all over the world, right? So it really depends on what application you're looking for, but that Phantom is really the most popular one out there today.
Andrew, you're joining us on the air by phone, and I for some reason in my mind, the picture that I have of you in my head is that you're sitting in the office at Lyft Technologies, and while you have a headset on talking to me about drones, you're flying a whole bunch of drones all over the room. Is that what's going on?
Well, the drones aren't flying, but there's an array of drones right behind me here, actually. We have our fleet, so it's pretty cool.
That is so cool. I can't wait to visit you guys at Lyft Technologies. Fascinating, fascinating education about drone technology. And again, as Andrew Dennison, Chief Operating Officer at Lyft Technologies, just explained, this isn't something that's just for the military or for Jeff Bezos at Amazon.com, but this is something that likely small business owners, whether you're in real estate or in a number of other industries, including agriculture, will be seeing across the country over the coming years. So we'll definitely be checking in with you, Andrew, to learn more. But in the meantime, we're running out of time. How can people learn more about Lyft and get more educated about the drone sector?
We're happy to answer any questions that people have about drones. That's my job. I do it every day. Check us out at lyft-tech.com. That's Lyft Technologies, lyft-tech.com.
Lyft-tech.com, and as you mentioned before, you're helping big companies make better decisions by providing aerial data, and in the same way, as you said, Boeing and Airbus makes airplanes. Well, you guys are actually flying like the Southwest of the world. You're actually flying these drones. So, again, fascinating, fascinating discussion.
Yep.
We'll follow your progress. Andrew Dennison, thanks for joining us on Get Down to Business.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Get Down to Business is brought to you in part by Everett Wealth Solutions, a registered investment advisor and financial planning firm, a fiduciary advisor that helps you create your personal financial wealth. You can find them at everettwealthsolutions.com or call 708-771-7777. 708-771-7777. We're brought to you in part by Tandem HR, or powered by Tandem HR, your solution center. Check them out, tandemhr.com. After the break, I've got a lot more tips, advice, and information for you. You don't want to miss it. Don't touch that dial. You're listening to Get Down to Business. Hey, welcome back. You're listening to Get Down to Business, the show that's all about small business, jobs, and entrepreneurship. Like it or not, tax season is here. In fact, it's been here for a few months. And just because the state of Illinois is behind on issuing refunds, in fact, they're behind on almost everything, doesn't mean that you have the ability to delay your filing. Here to join us is CPA Linda Foreman from Evanston, Illinois. Linda, welcome back to the program.
Hello, Shalom.
Thanks for joining us. So, Linda, the time is here. We've got just a few weeks remaining that folks need to file taxes, and most returns are actually filed in the final few weeks. What tips and advice do you have for our listeners that have not yet scheduled an appointment with a CPA or a tax preparer?
Well, one thing is, if you've got a few extra dollars in your pocket, it's not too late to make a contribution to an IRA or to a SEP IRA if you're able. And another thing is, before you make that appointment with your tax preparer, wait for all your 1099s and your K-1s from your brokers. A lot of brokers have put people into what they call publicly traded partnerships because it gives you a much better rate of return, but you can't file your tax return until you get that nice little K-1 piece of paper.
Oh, wow. And you're right about getting ready, getting prepared. It gets expensive to file amended returns. And when you're not organized, that's exactly what happens. So let's talk a little bit of organization tips. What are some other things that folks should be getting ready now after they finish listening to Get Down to Business to get ready for their tax preparer over the next week?
Well, first of all, do not come in with a shopping bag, if that's everyone's nightmare. Look at your previous tax return. See what kind of items were there. If you have interest or dividends from various places, make sure you've got all those 1099s there. Gather all your charitable contributions. If you've done volunteer work, figure out the mileage or any donations that you might have made of food or supplies, and get all your donation letters in hand, because sometimes if you make a donation of, let's say, $1,000, maybe only 50% of that is deductible, because it could have been an auction, a dinner. Raffles are not deductible, so take those receipts and send them bye-bye. So those are the things that you need to do to get organized, and actually start getting organized for 2016 right now. Get an envelope that says tax stuff, and put everything you think is applicable in there.
So that explains the envelope that was laying around in your office. Tax stuff. Got it. Good tips and good advice. Let's go to the issue that I was talking about earlier regarding the state of Illinois and the IRS. I know you and I have had this conversation so many times about the importance of the IRS, and I know that might not be a popular subject to talk about, but the IRS actually does an important service in collecting dollars critically needed to provide all the great services, or sometimes great services, that we look forward to. But the state of Illinois right now is, as everybody knows, in the middle of a budget impasse. Is that affecting the refunds that might be going out and the processing of tax returns?
It doesn't seem to be affecting the processing of tax returns, as long as you're e-filing, and the refunds, they did say, would be loosened up a bit during the month of March, so that's good news, and I would encourage everybody to take that pencil, take the pen, and put it aside. Electronic filing is the way to go. It cuts down on errors, and the other thing it does is it prompts identity theft information. If somebody has stolen your identity, within about 24 hours, you're going to know, and the IRS will bounce back your e-filed return and say, hey, somebody else filed under this number. So that then you have to go through a process of filling out forms. The IRS will actually give you your very own PIN number to file future returns so that they will know that it's really you, and you also have to file a police report. All sorts of identity theft issues. We've had people applying for jobs using the identity theft that they stole from a tax return.
I mean, let me be blunt over here, people. It's 2016. File electronically. It's better for you. You'll get your refunds. If you owe money, frankly, you'll pay that money faster. You don't need to wait around. You can even schedule the date of the payment when you actually file electronically. And as CPA Linda Foreman is mentioning, it prevents identity theft. There it'll be easier for the IRS to help you out if that occurs. And sadly, that has occurred. You can't open up a newspaper or follow the news without hearing about the identity theft concern. So, Linda, great advice for getting organized in these last few weeks of tax season. Great advice filing electronically, and great update, of course, on the state of Illinois current refund schedule. A little bit behind, but hopefully that's going to loosen up. Linda, are there any websites that you want to recommend other than IRS.gov for helpful tax preparation advice?
If you're going to be doing it by yourself, I would go get a tax program, and that tax program, if it's a good one, will prompt you with all sorts of questions, such as, did you have energy efficient improvements like new windows and new heating systems that you could get a credit on? One thing I do want to warn people on is the IRS does not call you, and last year we had phone calls.
You
got
to watch out. Linda, we're going to have to leave it there, but you do have to watch and make sure that you're not being spoofed by the IRS. CPA Linda Foreman, thanks for joining us on Get Down to Business. Get Down to Business. We're powered by Tandem HR, your solution center. Give them a call, 630-928-0510, 630-928-0510, or check them out online at TandemHR.com. So I've got some social media tips for you. You may have heard it rumored that hiring managers look at social media sites before making their decisions about job candidates. Well, a fact don't lie. 65% of employers check social media to see if a candidate presents himself or herself professionally, according to a survey conducted by CareerBuilder.com. But if you've been on tour in Afghanistan or building bridges in Guatemala for the last several years, being a professional on social media is understandably the last thing on your mind. Regardless of your experience or job history, keeping your social media profiles and professional can save you from the embarrassment of losing out on a great opportunity because you're being a social media misfit. So I've got some 10 simple social media do's and don'ts that will help you sidestep those kinds of pitfalls and help you stay a step ahead of your career competitors. So first, the do's. You do want to get active on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter, despite the, again, that surveillance that will be conducted on your profiles, you need to be active. 94% of recruiters are using LinkedIn to discover talent, while 65% are using Facebook and 55% are on Twitter. Involvement on these sites are an easy way to put your face, resume, skills, and experiences in front of recruiters. It's free advertising for your profile, for your resume. And you want to highlight your unique skills and interests. Employers want to see you're a well-rounded person vested in a bunch of different groups, activities, and volunteer efforts. Like the rest of us, recruiters are typing keywords when they search. So within your skill sets, be sure to include specific words and phrases that match the qualifications of jobs you are seeking. I know it goes without saying, but yes, use correct grammar. More than half of recruiters had a negative reaction to grammar and spelling mistakes on candidate social media profiles, according to a 2013 study that I found that was conducted by web recruiting firm JobVit. And it's so easy to prevent. Have you heard of a thing called spell check? Yes, you should be taking advantage of it. Join industry groups. Show future employers that you care about the field that you're hoping to get into. Whether it's writing for Cat Fancy or working for the hottest new Fortune 500, take part in online groups and discussions that are relevant to your future job prospects. 4 out of 5 recruiters wanted to see memberships and affiliations with professional organizations on a candidate's profile. That's what Time Magazine said, so it's got to be true. Start a discussion. Whether you're most active on Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn, display your leadership skills and enhance your online credibility by posing questions frequently and engaging in intelligent dialogue. The key word over here is intelligent dialogue. Don't just post things online all over, because trust me, it will be searched, it will be found. And you want to post, well, let me be clear. You don't want to post inappropriate images. I got through the do's of what you should be doing. Don't post inappropriate images. In 2013, 43% of employers who use social media to screen potential candidates said they found content that caused them not to hire. Half of those employers pointed the finger at provocative or inappropriate photos or content as the reason for those decisions. It's very simple. Be intelligent about it. Post information that you want companies to see. Don't post inappropriate images. Post overly opinionated content. Don't do that. Try to remain neutral, especially when it comes to political and religious issues. It's really easy to come across as an extreme, closed-minded, or judgmental when posting highly opinionated content. By all means, have opinions, just share them tactfully. Don't complain about current or past employers. The First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution guarantees freedom of speech, and that gives you the right to discuss a host of different issues with friends, colleagues, and coworkers online. But when it comes to berating your old manager or slandering your last employer, ask yourself if it's really worth it. If you're disgruntled because you would have preferred Starbucks over Caribou coffee in the break room or an Apple computer versus a PC on your desk, just grow up. Avoid posting complaints online that could potentially be viewed by future employers as trivial or petty. Put yourself in their shoes. Would you hire someone constantly complaining for all to see? Don't be offensive. Steer clear of posting, tweeting, or commenting on anything that could potentially be offensive or harassing. It might sound like common sense, but sadly it happens too often to leave off the list. Staying primarily neutral and keeping your comments, likes, and shares appropriate should protect you from having to wonder if that post might be seen as inappropriate or offensive. Don't spend too much time on social media. This is an important one. After harnessing your online persona, go out and live it. Doing your social media stuff is not the be-all and end-all. Even though LinkedIn, I cannot emphasize enough how important LinkedIn is, it's not a replacement for the job search. As you take control of your online presence, don't forget to take the next steps to actually becoming a marketplace professional. Educate yourself. Get involved in discussions in person. Bring about change. Help out with community projects. Join industry groups and work towards a degree. The bottom line, social media do's and don'ts on my list might seem intuitive or maybe even obvious, but research shows that despite the importance of being professional online, too few college students are heeding the experts' advice, and it's costing them job opportunities and prospects. So whether you're in business and you're looking for your next customer, or you're on the job search and you're looking for your next employment opportunity, be smart about it. Get involved. Post intelligent discussions on LinkedIn. Make sure your profiles are up. Yes, I'm encouraging you to make sure you are on social media, but be smart about it. Make sure you check your security settings. Make sure you're posting things that you would want others to see. As you start down the journey of becoming a professional online, following suit offline will be a natural progression and prepare you for life, whether it's after college. Get Down to Business is sponsored by Everwell Solutions, a registered investment advisor and financial planning firm, a fiduciary advisor that helps you create your personal financial wealth. Visit them online, EverettWealthSolutions.com, EverettWealthSolutions.com, or give them a call at 708-771-7777, 708-771-7777. Get Down to Business. We've got a lot of tips, advice, and we love to profile entrepreneurs and professionals that are making a difference in their community. And again, that's what's happening in the real world, but I encourage you, get on social media, take advantage of the tools that are out there. Get on my website, ShalomKlein.com. I've got a lot more tips and advice for all of you professionals. If you're listening to Get Down to Business, don't touch that dial. A lot more after the break.
You can find out about all of my events at ShalomKlein.com. And now it's time for your business tip of the week, which can be heard daily on the morning show at 7:30 a.m. right here on AM 560 The Answer. A meeting is a terrible thing to waste. There's no quicker way to set morale and productivity in an office than by convening a meeting that fails to produce results. On the other hand, efficient meetings can spark creativity, fuel groundbreaking ideas, and prompt meaningful action. Trust me, I've sat in the worst of meetings, and I've sat in the best of meetings, and there's no blanket rule. Meetings aren't a good thing. Meetings aren't a bad thing. The key is having a productive meeting. So I've got some tips for you professionals on how you can conduct meetings in a focused and effective way. Be sure that there's a good reason to have a meeting. It's counterproductive to hold a meeting just because you think it's been too long since your employees all got together. Determine what you'd like the gathering to achieve. Your objectives can be addressed with few one-on-one conversations or emails. Hold off on an all-hands meeting until there's a genuine need to do one. Make an agenda and stick to it. Putting together an agenda helps you assess beforehand what you hope to get out of the meeting. Once you've decided what those goals are and the related matters you want to review and discuss, distribute the agenda to meeting participants. Be sure to give everyone enough time to prepare their thoughts and contributions. And only invite people who have a reason to attend. It's common for people to be invited to a meeting, even if they have little or no stake in the outcome, often as a courtesy or out of a habit. But because the meeting has nothing to do with them, they don't have anything to offer. Restrict attendance to employees whose participation will likely generate results. Start and end on time. No exceptions. This may be the most critical predictor of how successful your meeting is. In general, the most productive meetings last 30 to 45 minutes tops. People's attention starts to wane after that. Short, structured meetings get things done. No latecomers are allowed. Nothing disrupts the flow of a meeting, like a person who comes in late takes a few noisy minutes to settle in and then asks for an update. Make it clear beforehand that latecomers are not welcome. Ban electronic devices when employees will bring laptops, smartphones, and other devices to meetings. They force whatever is holding their attention, and it will conflict with conversation or dialogue that's taking place. Issue a comprehensive ban on the electric grazing during the time you're together and encourage everyone to contribute. One or two dominant personalities can take over a meeting regardless of the value they bring or don't bring to the conversation. Ask everyone in the meeting for their comments and their feedback. Enlist a timekeeper and a note taker. Ask one attendee to watch the clock and somebody else to take some notes on how things have gone in the minutes of the meeting. And make sure you follow up after the meeting. Compile the meeting's notes into action items and distribute them to everyone so they understand that the next steps from the meeting, and make sure it's clear what will be taking place after the follow-up from that conversation. Remember, meetings aren't the place to wing it and hope for the best. Advanced preparation and a firm hand on the tiller are likely to encourage a new level of enthusiasm among employees, and it most importantly will get results. Again, meetings aren't a good thing. Meetings aren't a bad thing. The key is to have a productive meeting, and I hope that these 9 tips will allow you to be more productive in the week ahead. Get Down to Business is powered by Tandem HR, your solution center. You can find them at TandemHR.com. or give them a call at 630-928-0510, 630-928-0510. We call them our solution center because they have solutions for your management and HR needs. Once again, check out their website,
tandemhr.com. Get Down to Business is also brought to you in part by Everett Wealth Solutions, a registered investment advisor and financial planning firm, a fiduciary advisor that helps you create your personal financial wealth. Check them out online, everettwealthsolutions.com, or call them, easiest phone number to remember in the world. It's 708-771-7777. 708-771-7777. And remember, when you get back to the office tomorrow and you schedule that meeting before you start to willy-nilly invite everybody under the sun to those conversations, make sure you are inviting people that will contribute to the conversation. Make sure you keep those meetings in a timely manner. Make sure that there will be follow-up from those conversations. Meetings are a good thing if you structure them productively. Get Down to Business, once again, powered by Tandem HR. We'll talk to you next Sunday at 6 p.m., the show that's all about small business, jobs, and entrepreneurship. I'm your host, Shalom Klein. To success, let's get down to business.